From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm the man whose tailpipe emissions are always exactly as promised. Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. We have a great show for you today. We're very excited about our guest, the singer-songwriter Jewel. She has a new book and a new album out. But we should also let you know, listening at home, if we sound a little cramped today, well, in the spirit of His Holiness Pope Francis, we've given up our usual luxurious theater, and we're doing this show all stuffed inside a Fiat.
I hope that's the shift lever I'm feeling, Peter.
So, give us a call before our circulation gets cut off. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Teresa calling from Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Smith College? Nice to hear from you.
Yay!
I love Smith. What do you study there?
I'm a government major and a public policy minor.
Okay, now, as you know, Smith College has its share of stereotypes. How well do you embody them?
I am literally the opposite.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've got long hair, and I'm a Republican.
Whoa!
Right?
Wow.
I know.
Were you like some sort of quota there?
Oh, my God. Yeah, no. They snuck me in the last spot.
Wow. Do they make you live in your own dorm?
Mm-hmm. I'm segregated off. It's me, wow. Nancy Reagan, and Barbara Bush all in the corner.
Well, welcome to the show, Teresa. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a once promising young author and storyteller whose life has come to this, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Teresa.
Next, host of the public radio show Live Wire, it's Luke Burbank.
Hey, Teresa.
And making her debut on our panel, it's a comedian performing September 30th through October 1st at the Improv in Atlanta, Georgia, Eliza Schlesinger.
Hi.
Teresa, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Bill? This time, Bill Curtis is going to inaugurate this week's show with three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain. Two of them do that. You win our prize. The voice of the immortal Carl Castle on your voicemail. Are you ready to do this?
You bet I am.
I bet you are. Here we go. Your first quote is from Pope Francis.
Jesus also was very popular. And look at how that turned out.
So the Pope was trying and failing to tamp down the excitement about his first ever visit to where this week?
The United States.
The United States, of course. How could you miss it? First time he had ever traveled to the U.S. The highlight of Pope Francis's first visit to our country was a speech to a joint session of Congress. It was substantive. It was also a little slow. Ruth Bader Ginsburg fell asleep right away, and instead of making fun of her this time, the other justices just got in there and spooned with her.
Well, wasn't there a congressman or two who like didn't attend or walked out or something?
There was one congressman who said he was going to boycott the speech because I believe in his words, the Pope could talk about global warming on his own time.
Right. So, you know, I grew up Catholic, and there used to be a saying like among Catholics that, you know, if there was like a real hardcore priest or a nun or something, they'd say, they're more conservative than the Pope.
Right.
And it was like saying somebody was dumber than a sack of hammers, because nobody is really dumber than a sack of hammers, but, you know, it's you say that, and it's like there now are people more conservative than the Pope.
Yeah, it is a little
and
strange.
As it turns out, people dumber than a sack of hammers.
Maybe the same person.
Yeah. I know. The Pope did address issues in his speech that are most associated with the Democrats, immigration reform, and of course the environment. Many conservatives were not pleased with the Pope, so we're anxiously awaiting the first angry Republican to accuse the Pope of being a Muslim.
Peter, we just want to see the birth certificate.
Yeah,
okay.
And I love, everybody loves the fact that he, you know, completely eschews the whole limo thing and drives around in this little Fiat.
But nobody knows that Fiat is also an Uber X. So he wants to make a little money, just fires up the phone. I was watching some of the coverage this week, and I feel like it is starting to get a little bit out of hand, a little bit breathless from the TV networks.
Yeah.
CNN had the breaking news banner out, and what they were covering was that the breaking news was that the Pope had gone to the Vatican residence in Washington, D.C. That headline could have been, Pope goes to the exact place a Pope would probably go.
Pope goes home.
Yeah. Like, Pope went to a strip club would be breaking news.
Yes. All right, very good. Here, Teresa, is your next quote.
Over the past 4 years, and with continual improvements, we have developed the Volkswagen.
So that was Adolf Hitler. Speaking back in 1938, and until this week, that was considered pretty much the worst thing to know about Volkswagens. But then we found out for the past few years, that company has been building their cars to do what?
Violate emission standards.
Yeah, basically they programmed their cars to lie. The diesel engines were supposed to be green, you know, environmentally friendly, but instead the actual cars were spewing out all kinds of pollution, oil slicks, nuclear waste, Adam Sandler movies. It was terrible. So,
Big Daddy too.
Oh. So VW, this is amazing. They programmed their cars to turn on the emission controls only when they were being tested, and then as soon as they were driven away, they turned off again. It's crazy evil, really. But then again, if you're a VW exec, you know no matter what terrible thing you do, it won't be the worst thing a German ever did.
It's a sliding scale.
It really is.
I can't believe they've been able to harness the same technology I use regarding my beer belly when I'm at the beach.
It's basically,
if someone's looking at it, I'm sucking it in. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as they look away, it's like Ralph Cramden.
Although, you might ask, because this is the genius part. How did the car know it was being tested? It's a car. It doesn't know. Well, think about it. If you got a probe shoved up your exhaust, you'd know something was up, too.
And I personally would stop reporting at that moment.
Yes.
Woo-hoo! All right, Teresa. For your last one is actually a series of quotations.
When you come to a fork in the road, take it.
And?
Baseball is 90% mental and the other half is physical.
And finally?
It ain't over till it's over.
Well, sadly, it is over now, as this week we lost what baseball great and homespun philosopher who died at the age of 90?
Yogi Berra from my hometown.
Yogi Berra. Yes, you're from St. Louis.
No, Montclair, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, you're from Montclair. He lived in Montclair.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's interesting. He was born in St. Louis, Yogi Berra was, and he lived most of his life in Montclair. And some years ago, before his wife died, his wife said to him, Yogi, when you die, would you like to be buried back in St. Louis, your hometown, or here in New Jersey? And Yogi said, I don't know. Surprise me. He was, in addition to being quotable, he was a Hall of Fame catcher who played with DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle. He was the last of an era. Now that he's gone, there are no more athletes alive that aren't jerks. And you know, what do athletes say now? All your quotes are like, I'll give 110%, or I'll also give 110%, and not guilty, Your Honor.
Didn't he have a long-running beef with the Yankees after being a star and a manager for the Yankees?
He was a star for the Yankees. He managed the Yankees, and like some ridiculous, like 20 games into the season, if that, some underling came and said, oh, by the way, Yogi, you're fired. And Yogi was so offended, he never stepped foot in Yankee Stadium for 14 years.
What happened to bring him back? They had a picnic basket there?
The picnic basket?
Oh, yeah.
Bill, how did Teresa do in our quiz?
She got 3 right. She's a winner. But since the Pope is in town, that automatically multiplies to 30.
I didn't know the Pope had that effect.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Teresa. Thanks for playing.
Thanks so much.
We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium here in Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to wbez.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, the Dalai Lama is getting up there in years, knows he can't llama forever. In an interview with the BBC, he said that if a woman were to be the next reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, she had better be what?
She had better be Tibetan.
I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not what he pointed out.
If a woman, she had better be, not attractive.
Yes, attractive.
Seriously.
Yes.
The Dalai Lama
said that? The Dalai Lama said that.
Oh, I'm going back to the Pope.
Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, teaches us many things. Peace comes from within. We must free ourselves from earthly desires. And heaven must be missing an angel because, girl, you are right here. So the Dalai Lama is being interviewed by the BBC. BBC says, well, what about a female Dalai Lama? He says, yeah, well, yes, but she'll have to be attractive. And the BBC reporter said, you're clearly joking, or this is some sort of Buddhist metaphor. And the Dalai Lama said, no. If it's a woman, she has to be attractive. Quote, otherwise, she's not much use, unquote.
Oh. The Dalai Lama celibate?
With that face, he has to be.
Yeah. Understand why.
But how do you find an attractive successor? Do you find the Dalai Lama's female reincarnation by holding the first ever wet saffron robe contest? We're just amazed that a Tibetan Buddhist would be like this. Is there cat calling at Buddhist temples? It's like, oh, mama.
You know how psyched China is about this because they were like, we told you that guy was a jerk.
Yeah, see?
Like, for 40 years, we've been judging them. They're like, see, this is what we were taught. He's different when no one's around.
Yeah. You get a couple drinks in him.
Yeah. Coming up, our panelists get gainfully employed in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Universal Pictures, presenting Steve Jobs, from the Academy Award-winning director of Slumdog Millionaire and the Academy Award-winning writer of The Social Network. Steve Jobs, starring Michael Fassbender, Kate Winslet, Seth Rogen, and Jeff Daniels, is in select theaters beginning October 9th. Everywhere, October 16th.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Luke Burbank, and Eliza Schlesinger. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is James.
Hey, James, where are you calling from?
Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas, where we have been in June, so we'll never go back in June.
Yes, no, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, how are things now? Has it started to cool down a bit?
My car read 95 today on the way home.
That's
so
nothing.
Yeah,
you should not drive that fast, bro.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, James. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is the topic?
Being an anchorman ain't easy, but it sure beats working.
Offices have their ways of bringing us down. Paper cuts, annoying interns, cubicle fires. But this week, we read about a workplace actually trying to improve the lives of employees in a creative way. Our panelists are going to tell you about it. Pick the one who's telling the truth, and you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to play, sir?
I am quite ready.
Well, first, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
We've all been there before, sitting at our desk, feeling overwhelmed, maybe even a little emotional, trying to hide our tears behind a Ziggy Word of the Day calendar. But instead of hiding those tears, Japanese women in the workplace can now have them gently wiped away by a hot dude they've rented. That's right, for the low, low price of $65 U.S. Aika Miso Donshi Delivery Service will send a guy armed with a bag full of Nicholas Sparks movies to get your female workforce crying in unison, apparently as a way of boosting morale. The owners of the service, who've clearly never been in a room full of hysterically crying women, say the service also helps with efficiency in the workplace. The Danshis come in 5 flavors: intellectual type, hot older guy type, dentist type, thug type, and little brother type, which is gross.
a service that sends hot guys to wipe away your tears after a good mass cry in Japan. Your next story of a little office helper comes from Eliza Schlesinger.
A recent Gallup poll revealed that a whopping 45% of American employees earning over $70,000 a year said the feeling they experience least in the workplace is comfort. Alexis Archer of Portland, Oregon, set out to solve this problem, and that's when Grandma To Go was born. For around $60 an hour, Grandma To Go can send a variety of archetypes of grandparent to your office for the quintessential grandmanial experience. Services include hugs, covering your office furniture in plastic, cooking any comfort foods, to distributing weird grandma candy like those puffy orange circus peanuts. Grandma types include sassy Southern grandma, in both racist and non, standard Jewish, and for those of you who are closer to their grandpa, they have Santa Claus-esque, Vietnam vet grandpa, who saw some crap and doesn't do much talking, and big techs. No matter your business, Grandma To Go will come to your office and put a smile on your face, or wipe that damn smile off your face, or I'll wipe it off for you. They also have alcoholic grandpa.
Grandma or grandpa.
Or grandpa.
Rental service.
Yeah.
Your last story of an unexpected workplace service comes from Tom Baudet.
Doing business in a global economy can be hard on the people doing it. Time zone hopping, language barriers, JFK Airport. And there is nothing more difficult for the traveling professional to endure than the laws, customs, and business practices of Russia and other former Soviet states. One custom in particular, that of consuming massive amounts of vodka to mark the closing of a deal, the failure to close a deal, or because why not, has inspired Bankelshin, a German-based home furnishing exporter, to take proactive measures. After three of its advanced sales team were hospitalized in Moscow with alcohol poisoning, and another disappeared in Kiev for several days, returning tattooed and clutching a small dog, Bankelshin HR manager Jan Buettner initiated a program that would train their traveling reps to drink like a Russian. Russian drinkers can metabolize alcohol at an alarming rate, said Herr Buettner. Without the proper conditioning, you'll die trying to keep up. Lessons include vodka tonic, hold the tonic, binge hinging, a bicep exercise, and they've gone so far as to bring in consultants from faraway Sigma Nu fraternity at Ohio State University. Trainee Frau Luana Stovall, when asked to comment on the program, said, "You have the nicest buns."
Okay. Let's say you're trying to compete in today's fast-paced, cutthroat business world. Which of these services is actually available to you? In Japan, a service that will send hot guys to make your female staffers cry and then wipe away their tears, and presumably a cathartic and cleansing experience. From Eliza, rent a grandmother so you can have somebody to come and comfort you or boss you around, depending on what you need. Or from Tom Baudet, a service that helps your employees train to binge drink like they do in Russia. Which of these is the real story of a help in today's business world?
Oh, I really want it to be C, but I think A sounds just strange enough to be true.
So you're going to go with Luke's very strange story of the Japanese service that provides hot men to help you cry. Well, to bring you the truth, we spoke to a journalist who had covered this real story.
In Japan now, it's possible to hire a man who will come to your workplace or wherever else you ask him to come and wipe away your tears while you cry.
That was Corinne Pertil, a reporter for Quartz, who covered the story of the Japanese hot guys who come to your office and wipe away your tears. So you got it right.
That is absolutely insane.
I think so. You earned a point for Luke Burbank. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your voicemail. Well done, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And now the game where we reward a lifetime of meaningful and useful struggle with 5 minutes of pointless diversion. We call it Not My Job. The singer-songwriter Jewel, famously, was sleeping in her car in the streets of San Diego just before she hit it big with her first album. We hope that allowed her to finally move into a much nicer, more comfortable car. She's written a memoir titled Never Broken. We are delighted to have her with us now. Jewel, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, thank you.
So, Jewel, you grew up in Alaska. Tell us what your upbringing was like there.
Yeah, it was a very rural existence. It's also a very beautiful place. It's very rugged and demands that you work hard to make a living up there, but it's beautiful.
And one of the things you did was you were yodeling with your father in bars at the age of 8?
I was. Yeah, my dad and I became a duet when my mom left when I was 8, and I was probably the only fourth grader that went from elementary school right to the bar. Yeah.
Skipping those troublesome middle years before you... Well, you tell this story. You tell so many stories in the book, and I do recommend it. It's slightly harrowing, but there's one story you tell of, like, playing in biker bars, and mm-hmm. the police would raid the biker bar, and you had to go hide in the bathroom?
Yeah, I knew. Obviously, I was underage, so the routine was I would go in the bathroom while the cops were there, and the biker men were always the most protective, actually. They was the best bars to sing in. And they would send their quote-unquote women in to keep me company. And I have amazing memories of me in button-up shirts with long, straight, brushed hair sitting there with all these biker women in various states of leather and acid-washed denim and then being like, hey, kid, you sing beautiful. You want to sing at me and my old man's wedding? The son of a bitch.
Now, there's a particular part of your story I was amazed to read, and I want to get to it now. So bringing you forward a little bit in time, you're 15 years old. You're living by yourself in an unheated cabin near Homer, Alaska. You're commuting to work by horse, which I love.
Or hitchhiking, yeah.
Were there horse jams on the way into downtown Homer?
There were not, but the drive-thru was interesting.
I can imagine.
McDonald's, yeah.
And you get an invitation to apply to Interlochen, the famous art school in Michigan. And well, tell me what happened next.
I was given a partial scholarship, and I needed to raise about $10,000, which I wasn't able to come up with. And so a bunch of the women in town and a bunch of my aunts helped me organize my first solo concert. I hadn't written any songs yet, but I did Cole Porter songs. And a lot of local businesses donated items, and we auctioned them off. And I made quite a bit of money, but I was still short. And Mr. Tom Baudette helped. He made sure I got off to school, and he helped write a check and sent me off. Yeah.
So I just want to clarify, because I love this. So you're like, you're 15 years old, you're living by yourself, you have no money, here's your chance to go to art school. And after the concert, you were still short how much money?
Well, this is getting quite personal.
Well, now in the book, you say that Tom Baudette, who you call Homer's resident celebrity, mm-hmm. wrote you a check for $5,000.
Oh, I forgot to put it in there. So, yeah, sorry about that, Tom. No,
wait a minute. No. You were getting all shy about information that I only knew because you wrote it in your book?
Right. Well, Jewel, hi, by the way.
It's been
a long time. And thank you so much for remembering that. But it's funny. I remembered it as $500.
Maybe it was. It seemed like $5,000.
I like your version better. But I also seem to recall that your Aunt Sharon was my bookkeeper at the time. And I just got to wonder now if I said, Sharon, why don't you write Jewel a check for $500? And
I always loved that Aunt Sharon.
Yeah, she was always very good to you. Me too.
And what's interesting is you write in the book quite movingly and a little, again, harrowingly about showing up at Interlochen and all these rich kids who had grown up with support and money and intact families all there in their nice clothes and you're wandering around. You don't know how to do anything. You don't know how to act like there. And it occurred to me, you're Harry Potter. Interlochen was Hogwarts, and Tom was your Hagrid.
I like that. Hagrid survives, right?
I think he makes it in the end. You're okay. So does Harry. So obviously, great things then happened. You had many adventures. There's a story about you opened for Bob Dylan, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that must have been pretty cool.
That was cool. You know, my first record failed for the first year, and so typically artists and labels will move on and make a second record. But then Bob Dylan took me out, and so I postponed that second album and toured with him, and he mentored me, and
just every night went over my lyrics, and he's like, hey, what made you write that lyric? And I was like, I can't believe Bob Dylan is asking me about my lyrics. And so he gave me books to read, and he was incredible.
You were able to understand what he was saying?
Yeah, I'm a great translator. He's used me in several countries.
Really?
Yeah, my Japanese Bob Dylan's really is like, I don't, I do what.
So Bob Dylan will stand up and go, hey, what's nice to see you? And Jules like, he says, it's very nice to see you.
Yes.
I have to ask you this question because I rarely get a chance to do this, to confirm one celebrity story with another.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe wrote a book, and we interviewed him about the book, but not this particular story. He says that you were a guest star on his ill-fated TV show, Lion's Den, and you were great. He thought yours as an actor, your talent was as amazing as a singer, but that when it came time, you played his love interest to like make out, you wouldn't do it because you thought it was inappropriate for a married woman to be making out with another guy. That's what Rob Lowe says. Jewel, is this true?
That is true.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't kiss Rob Lowe. I didn't know that would be such a big deal. Now, that said, you know, it was unprofessional of me. I mean, I agreed to do the gig, and the kissing was in the script. And I did one kissing scene with him, and people can Google it. So it happened. I just didn't do it the other times that was in the script because I don't think they asked me back. It was just where I was at the time.
I understand, but I'm glad to confirm it because I wouldn't want to think that Rob Lowe was a liar.
He was not.
Okay. Well, Jewel, it is a pleasure to talk to you and reunite you with your old friend Tom. But we have invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
We hope you sleep in a safe.
That's because for every Jewel, there's a Jewel thief out there. We're going to ask you three questions about jewel thieves. Answer two correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their voicemail. Bill, who is Jewel playing for?
Amy Thompson of Portland, Oregon.
Here's your first question. One of the most famous jewel thefts in history was the stealing of the Irish crown jewels in 1907, a crime that still has not been solved. The lead suspect, though, was the man who was supposed to be keeping the crown jewels safe. Why was he suspected? Was it A, because he used to gaze at them and say, someday you shall be mine. B, because he once got drunk and woke up wearing them around his neck. Or C, because his wife suddenly appeared wearing what looked like the Irish crown jewels, which she said she got as a present from her husband.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B? He got drunk and woke up with them around his neck?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what he did.
Really?
Yeah. Arthur Vickers was the man who was supposed to guard the jewels, but he was known for getting drunk and taking them out of their safe. But nobody could ever prove he took them, so we don't know where they went. In August 2012, a Massachusetts man stole a valuable diamond from a guy who was selling it on Craigslist. Basically, he met the guy to look at the diamond, grabbed it, and ran.
Wow.
But the thief was caught when he did what? A, he responded to an ad placed by the police for an even bigger diamond with the text, bet you can't steal this one. B, he sued the guy he stole from for fraud when the diamond proved to be slightly smaller than advertised in Craigslist. Or C, he constantly texted the victim about his anxiety and guilt about stealing the diamond.
I'm going with C.
You're going to go with C. You're right.
Wow.
The guy started sending texts because he had the guy's phone number via Craigslist. So he started sending texts to the victim, and the last one begged the victim to come get him because he was having a panic attack.
It just sounds like a personal ad on Craigslist.
Yeah, I know, it really does.
How many roses?
All right, let's see if you can be perfect here, because you are showing a surprisingly alarming amount of expertise. Just a few weeks ago, a pair of Ohio jewel thieves snatched 26 diamond rings, but their getaway was foiled when what happened? They counted, realized they only had 20 total fingers, so they had no way of taking the extra six rings. B, they got stuck in the elevator and had to be rescued by police. Or C, their getaway car was impounded for spewing 40 times the allowable limit of nitrogen oxide.
They could have got pulled over from their exhaust system being too bad. I'm going to go with B, though.
You're right again, Jewel. Very good.
Impressive.
Bill, how did Jewel do in our quiz?
Well, she did all right. 3-0.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Jewel.
Well done.
Thank you.
Jewel's new book is Never Broken. It is an amazing story, and yes, it does end well. Her new album is picking up the pieces. Jewel, thank you so much for joining us on Wait
Listen.
Thanks,
guys.
Great to talk to you, Jewel.
Hey, Tom. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
just a minute, we've seen the clouds from both sides now in our Listener Limerick Challenge game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Trunk Club, a clothing service that matches guys with personal stylists who do all the work to find them the clothes they need. Here's Trunk Club's CEO, Brian Spaley, talking about their approach.
Trunk Club supports NPR because it cuts through the clutter as our trusted source for news. It's similar to how Trunk Club members trust their stylists to simplify the process of shopping for clothes. We cut through the clutter of retail and give guys exactly what they're looking for.
Trunk Club is not a subscription service, and you only pay for the clothes you keep. Visit trunkclub.com/wait to get started.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Eliza Schlesinger, Luke Burbank, and Tom Baudette. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. In just a minute, Bill ventures deep into a cave in South Africa to discover a new species of rhymeate. In our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Luke, after a number of incidents, Michigan State University, UNC Chapel Hill, and some other colleges are banning what risky student activity?
Streaking? Can I have a hint?
Yeah, it may seem relaxing, but it's like a ropey death trap.
Hammocks?
Yes. Sitting in hammocks, says one crazed outlaw at Michigan State, quoted in the Wall Street Journal. It's hammock at your own risk, but I hammock pretty much every day. Colleges say hammocking is a safety issue and can damage trees. And the ban is why, you know, this is in the news. But the more important thing is, did you guys know hammock is a verb?
No.
I didn't know that. It's like saying, I'm pretty tired. I'm going to bed for a while.
We had a hammock out behind our house for two summers. We saw one broken collarbone, at least three fights a day between my two sons. And we finally just took it down. It's just, it wasn't worth it.
Not very relaxing.
Hammocking is a nightmare.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Hammocks, the slouching menace.
Yeah. Tom, this week a costume maker unveiled what is sure to be the big hit at this year's Halloween parties. You know, the sexy this, the sexy that. This is the sexy what costume?
Can't be the sexy Pope.
It's not the sexy Pope. Not the sexy Although, Pope. Some costume maker just went, hey!
It's got to be huge.
But it is a sexy.
It's supposedly, it's advertised as sexy. I don't know how sexy it is.
It's not the sexy Trump. It's not.
It? Why not?
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Sexy Trump or the just Trump?
No, sexy Donald Trump is a costume you can now buy.
No, that is some costume.
Yes, if you're looking to spice things up this Halloween with a costume that's super sexy, definitely scary, and a little racist, get the sexy Donald Trump costume. Now, I know what you're thinking. Isn't a regular Donald Trump costume a sexy Donald Trump costume?
The women love him.
Yeah.
Because he cherishes women.
He does. He loves the women. Loves them.
Cherishes them.
This is a tight suit top, just the top, short shorts, booty shorts, a wig, of course, and a Make America Great Again hat. But here's the thing. If you wear it, be aware there's only one person in the world who gets turned on by this, and that is Donald Trump.
The idea of a sexy Donald Trump outfit is so nonsensical that it makes me think there was a fire at a wig factory, and they just were like, what are we going to do with these obviously ridiculous mangled wigs? Yeah. Think. Oh, my God,
or
think.
Or maybe
this was reverse engineered
it
in
really
some
was.
Way.
Up. It's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website. That's waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out our sister podcast, How to Do Everything. This week, Mike and Ian tell you at which embassy in Washington, D.C., you're most likely to find naked diplomats. Or avoid them, I guess, if that's your priority. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. It's Rena Strober from Los Angeles, California.
Well, hello, Rena. How
are
you?
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to Nusha, not to Avad. And what do you do there in L.A.?
I teach voice at the Academy of Music for the Blind. So I teach voice to blind children who are 4 to 18 years old.
That's frustratingly noble and admirable. Yeah. I have nothing to do with it.
Another, can't make any jokes.
Another Wall Street fat cat.
Yeah. Well, welcome to our show, Rena.
Thanks.
Bill Curtis is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
That dull time called work, I can bridge it. I grab, touch, and squirm like an idiot. My habits may grate, but they help my heart rate. I stay in good shape, because I...
Wait. I was thinking digit, but that doesn't make sense.
Close.
Well, it's something you might do with your digits.
It rhymes with digit.
It does. Yeah. Well, why don't you hear the limerick again?
Okay, thank you.
That dull time called work, I can bridge it. I grab, touch, and squirm like an idiot. My habits may grate, but they help my heart rate. I stay in good shape, because I...
Oh, my goodness. I'm so nervous.
I know it happens. Just try to relax.
My heart is racing.
Pretend instead of being talking to me, you're just at home, listening to the radio, doing your dishes, whatever.
Okay. It'd be easier if you were all blind.
Well,
okay,
to be fair...
We've got our eyes closed now, so...
We can't see you, Rena.
Okay, good.
So it's just as good as that. It's
fidget,
a word.
Fidget, fidget.
Yes,
yes, yes, yes.
Remember? Do you remember when we were told that sitting all day was killing us? It turns out that it might be all right as long as you fidget. According to a new report from England, fidgeting allows our muscles small bursts of activity, which research suggests can add years to your life. Of course, all the extra years you gain by fidgeting are balanced out by the fact that all of your coworkers are currently plotting your death. If he spins that pen one more time... Fidgeting is basically, it's like tiny exercises. You know what's catching on when your gym tries to charge you $100 to attend a cross-fidget class.
No.
All right, here is your next limit.
When my bladder resembles the sea, I don't care how they're questioning me. Without bathrooms, I'm ruthless and endlessly truthless. I lie when I'm holding my...
Pee!
No! There you go. That one she got. People who have full bladders lie more convincingly than those who don't. Apparently, the parts of the brain that help you focus on not ruining your pants are the same parts of your brain that help you sell a lie, right? So even if someone seems sincere as they're telling you something, watch what they do next. So it's like, oh no, this Volkswagen is very good for the environment. Now, if you'll excuse me just a minute.
Wow, that is so... I mean, I totally buy... I'm a very honest person. I do not lie. But when I have to really pee on an airplane, and they won't... And, like, the seatbelt sign is on, I tell them I just had hernia surgery. And that it's extremely painful for me if I don't use the bathroom.
And it's not true.
It's not in the least bit true.
But according to this
Yeah, but
study,
I have no, because I only say that when I have to pee, right?
Who's going to challenge that?
So, yeah.
Let's see the scar.
Yeah.
United might, but
right.
Still.
Show me the truss.
Show me
the truss.
Mm-hmm. I was just
tense focus.
Thinking about how full all my ex-boyfriend's bladders were the entire time we were dating. How full mine is right now.
Here is your last limerick.
Okay.
I'm clean, but I can't be too proud. Like Pigpen, we all are endowed. Tiny skin particles and minuscule farticles, they all float around in a...
Oh, a cloud.
Yes.
Cloud,
this cloud is not that cute, though. So, you know, we all know there's lots of bacteria in your gut, but did you know that each of our bodies is surrounded by a cloud filled with trillions and trillions of bacteria and skin particles and fecal matter? It's true. It's true of you and your friends and your girlfriend and your boyfriend and your mother and the guy sitting next to you in the subway whose cloud you can actually see.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, well, but I've never noticed them. I never smell them or anything. Well, we've evolved not to be able to detect each other's bacteria clouds because to continue to reproduce, in our species, it was important we could stand to get within 3 feet of each other.
Wow.
Trillions.
Trillions.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, Tom.
Yeah. And so our when we are together, our bacteria and all that are interreacting.
Yeah, and we each have this very distinct biome that extends outside of our bodies.
Are these like the auras that the wackos are always?
Yeah.
Maybe there are people who haven't devolved out of
that
being
was a
able
fart
to,
cloud, not an aura.
Right. Exactly.
Bill, how did Rena do on our quiz?
Perfect. 3 for 3.
Yay!
Well done, Rena. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye, bye.
Bye.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Tom and Luke each have 3. Eliza has 2.
All right. Eliza, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank.
Okay.
1 month after he resigned from office, Alex Tsipras was reelected prime minister of blank.
Greece.
Right. A 24-year-old British man arrested after a high-speed chase with police admitted that he blanked.
Messed up.
That he learned to drive on his PlayStation. On Sunday, Viola Davis became the first black woman to win a blank for Best Actress
Emmy.
In a Drama Series. Yes. Police in Moscow chased a man down several city streets before realizing the man was blanking.
Sleeping.
No.
Still. No, okay, before realizing the man was walking.
No, he was finishing the 10K race.
Finishing the 10K race in Moscow.
Yes.
That they do every year.
Yes. Now, let me explain. The Russian world championship runner Rinas Akhmediev was only 500 meters away from winning the 10K.
Yep.
When he was chased down by police and briefly detained. He would have been held even longer had the officer who stopped him not been called away to ticket an entire NASCAR event for speeding. Bill, how did Eliza do in our quiz?
Well, Eliza got 2 right.
Thank you.
And you have a total of 6 now, but you're in the lead.
All right. Thank you.
We have flipped a coin. Tom's elected to go last. So, Luke, you're up next, fill in the blank. This week, Senate Republicans proposed a bill to avoid a potential blank.
Shutdown.
Right. Last Friday, President Obama nominated the U.S.'s first openly blank Secretary of the Army.
Gay.
Yes. This week, the head of the Peanut Corporation of America was sentenced to 28 years for knowingly shipping peanuts tainted with blank.
Salmonella.
Right. This week, Turing Pharmaceutical CEO Martin Shkreli became public enemy number one by buying the patent for a 62-year-old drug and then blanking.
Raising it by many, many, many times its original price.
Yes, 5,000%. An Oklahoma man who went out drinking to celebrate his birthday did not realize until he got home that he had blanked.
Celebrated too hard.
No, that he had been shot 2 times. This week,
well,
researchers reported on Monday that 87 of 91 NFL players tested had positive results for a brain disease linked to blank.
Concussions.
Yes. This Sunday, a 78-year-old Costco shopper was punched in the face because he was blanking.
Shooting off a gun at the other guy's birthday.
No. He was punched in the face because apparently he was blocking another customer from getting to the Nutella samples. And what should be a cautionary tale for anyone who thinks that Nutella is a healthy snack option. A 78-year-old grandfather was shopping at Costco on Sunday, was punched in the face by a 24-year-old because he was blocking the young man from getting to the store's free samples.
And there's not a jury in the country that'll convict that guy.
I know. Bill, how did Luke do on our quiz?
Luke got 5 right. 10 more points. Total of 13. And Eliza, I'm sorry, but Luke takes the lead.
Okay, I knew that. I did that math. Thank you.
All right, then, Bill, how many does Tom need to win?
5 to tie and 6 to win.
All right, here you go, Tom. This is for the game. On Thursday, President Obama held a summit meeting with the president of blank.
China.
Yes, presidential hopeful Ben Carson came under fire this week after he said that no blank should ever be president.
Muslim.
Right. After over 3 years of negotiations, the president of blank announced a breakthrough in peace talks with rebel leaders.
Colombia.
Yes, Donald Trump announced Wednesday that he was boycotting cable news outlet blank for, quote, treating me so unfairly.
Fox.
Yes, a man in Pennsylvania has been sentenced for up to 124 years for armed robbery after the jury rejected his claim that blank.
He was just making a friendly withdrawal.
No, They rejected his claim that the robberies were actually committed by his evil twin. A federal judge in Los Angeles ruled that all copyright claims against the song Blank are invalid.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yes, a fan at last Saturday's Blue Jays Red Sox game had too much to drink and blanked.
He tackled their mascot, Moose.
No, he fell asleep while standing at a urinal, pulled the urinal off the wall, and flooded a section of the stadium.
Oh, God. Now, Luke, am I right? How many times has that happened?
This season? Yeah. For me?
So apparently the Blue Jays fan got up to use the bathroom during the sixth inning, proceeded to pass out at the urinal, and as he fell, he ripped it off the wall. And while this did in turn cause a massive flood that necessitated the evacuation of a section of the stadium, we can agree the worst part is somebody actually touched a baseball stadium urinal. Bill, did Tom Beaudet do well enough to win?
Well, he did well. 5 right, 10 more points, 13. But that means Tom and Luke are tied for the lead and championship.
Oh, well. In just a minute, now that we've heard the terrible news from VW, we're going to ask our panelists what will be the next secret we'll learn that our cars have been keeping from us.
Support for NPR and this podcast comes from Bleecker Street, presenting the new film Pawn Sacrifice. In a true story set during the height of the Cold War, American chess prodigy Bobby Fischer, played by Tobey Maguire, finds himself caught between two superpowers when he challenges the Soviet Empire. Also starring Liev Schreiber and Peter Sarsgaard, Pawn Sacrifice chronicles Fischer's struggles with genius and madness and the rise and fall of a kid from Brooklyn who captured the imagination of the world. Now playing.
Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Hay, Let's Keep It Clean, Berman, Benevolent Overlord. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Miles Dornbos and Robin Lynn. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Special thanks this week to our old friend Gary Yeck. Our CFO is Andy Yen. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike. I stuffed the bill in my shirt, Danforth. Now, panel, what secret have our cars been keeping from us? Luke Burbank.
Sometimes when we're rounding a corner and giving the car some gas, it briefly thinks of its previous owner. Just for a second.
Eliza Schlesinger.
Cars learning to self-park is just the next step in them rising up to kill us all in a revolution.
And Tom Beaudet.
If you're ever driving down the road lost in your own thoughts and your little blind spot detector blinks on and off for no apparent reason, it's because it's detected a gap in your intellect.
Well, if we find out any of that, panel, we are going to ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you to Birthday Boy, Mr. Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Tom Beaudet. Welcome, and thanks to Eliza Schlesinger, and thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week from beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. This is NPR.